Testing, testing, testing. Can you hear me? This is Audible Autism.
Hello, everybody. This is Audible Autism. Interesting people, interesting facts. You have me, Oddeye, as well as Luke back here. What we have is being autistic and also dealing with shared accommodation. Joe, I suppose the way I start this is generally we do with a lot of our guests is how did you come to learn that you was autistic or on the spectrum, so to speak?
I was diagnosed at the age of 5, I believe. Yeah, I was just diagnosed very young.
How would you say that impacts how you sort of view the world and just yourself?
I take full pride in being autistic. I mean, the only difference it makes really is differences in communication, differences in how I perceive what other people say, and spending the whole 22 years of me being alive trying to adjust to the neurotypical world, really.
Yeah. As the topic you wanted to discuss was shared accommodation, which I was introduced to you via a friend. I think it might help if you explain to the listeners what shared accommodation is and also what you've been dealing with it.
So it's actually, to clarify, supported accommodation. Right. And what it means, for those who don't know, is you're living in a block of flats. It could be 4 flats with 1 kitchen, or it could be 45 flats with 45 kitchens. And that's where I live. And what makes it supported is, even though it's my own flat in my own name and I pay my bills, the council pays for my rent while I work part-time. And there are support staff there 24 hours, 365. And they are there to help us with anything that we need help with, whether that's help cleaning your flat, help applying for a job, help managing your finances, help with any sort of health issues that you might have. And anything that they can't help with, they'll direct you to someone who can help you.
Is this your first time being in a shared accommodation situation?
So I've lived in my supported accommodation since I was 18. Mm-hmm. And I'm now 22, so 4 years. Before then, I was living with my family.
Okay.
But what makes me need to live in supported accommodation, apart from being autistic, is that I'm also on medication for depression and anxiety.
Oh, so I get mental health support there. How did you get introduced to shared accommodation? And what would you say were the initial challenges in terms of getting used to it?
I was introduced to it when I was in a psychiatric ward when I was 17. My social workers that I've been having since then, they helped me get into my brand new accommodation when I was 18 and I moved out of family. And the challenges that I faced when I first moved in, because that was very different to how it is now, were mostly me getting used to living on my own and not living with family, and getting used to asking for support workers for help rather than my mum and dad. And in the last 4 years of me living there, I felt supported when I've asked for help. But there have been many situations where I felt like the support was inadequate.
How did your parents respond to you going into shared accommodation?
So the first idea was when I was in hospital when I was 17. Mm-hmm. And that was while I was still living with them. And they were fully on board with the idea because it was suggested by a family therapist in the hospital.
Okay.
And when I first moved in, obviously, since we were both getting used to me living away from them, I spent every week with them for one night. But that stopped after a while and we all got used to it. They were happy that I now live independently.
Okay. I still live with my family members, which is especially interesting because, fun fact, listeners, over the past couple of months, I've had to deal with building work in my house, which, had a lot going on, to say the least. And Luke, how would you describe your living situation? Would you say you stay with flatmates or do you live on your own?
Well, I actually live alone. Over 2.5 years ago, I managed to get a mortgage for a place in Bradford. It was a scary thing, but owning my own house does have its benefits, like not having to worry about visits from letting agents to check if the house is okay. And so those things used to cause me a lot of anxiety when I was living in rented accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm in a really privileged position that was able to afford a mortgage, and you know, I'm able to live on my own in almost complete control of my environment. But I'm just thinking, Joe, you know, in your situation, if there's anything you want to, you know, change about where you're living, like say you want, I don't know, some blackout curtains installed in, or you know, you want maybe, I don't know, something like soundproofing to make your accommodation more accessible. Is it hard to ask for and get those adjustments made?
Asking for it is easy. Getting for it is hard. And what makes it hard is recently, now that I've moved into a different flat in the same accommodation, some things they have provided to me, like a toaster or a microwave. One thing they did provide to me, which was a bed frame, but then they took back that decision, seeing that I already had in a box that I was going to sell on eBay. They didn't eventually take it back. They eventually let me keep it because I unfortunately had to argue with them over email over it. And that was an anxiety racking process. With regards to soundproofing, I've not asked, but I really wish it was one of those things that I didn't have to ask them for and mm-hmm. I could just do it.
Yeah.
Because what got me to move into a different flat recently was the flatmate I used to live with was bullying me all the time. And that really impacted my mental health. And that included playing a lot of loud music at night, which kept me awake
mm-hmm.
and even made me miss work. Luckily, right now in my new flat, I don't really hear any noise at night. So I don't really kind of need to soundproof it, at least for now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's my answer to your question, Luke.
The issue with the mattress. So you had a spare that you was looking to sell and they took that as if, oh, that's one you bought for yourself. So they tried to say, because you had that one, oh, you don't need to prioritize another one for you because that one's exactly, there.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. been solved.
This leads on to, I suppose, the big question. It's very, very blunt and obvious, but I was going to ask about what sort of challenges would you say you've encountered? Because I feel you've already brought up that certain things you feel like you shouldn't need to bring up already, like soundproofing.
Unfortunately, quite a long list of things that I've had to write to one of my counsellors about. I've already mentioned being bullied by a flatmate.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst of that wasn't the flatmate himself. It was the way staff responded to it. In other words, all they were saying to me was, this is all just pettiness and a misunderstanding. I see no reason to separate you two. And it took 5 months for us to be separated. It just took so much of me complaining, which was a very hard process to go through. Even some members were laughing at it, which I thought was disgusting. One issue that I did face quite a number of years ago in my accommodation was a staff member literally saying to me that I pace around too much. Now, not only is that discriminatory towards autistic people, as support workers, they should be taught not to say things like that from day one.
Yes, yes. And I feel like quite a few instances, some of them that I've had as far as medical professionals, but not so much people specifically with disabilities, is like, for me, the callousness as far as the issues you were dealing with. Because if you're dealing with bullying for 4 months and they were laughing at your situation, how would they expect you to take them seriously with anything else that comes up? You know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly. But one thing worth bearing in mind about any example I will give mm-hmm. is that it's a privatized accommodation belonging to a private company, which is run for profit. That includes charging residents for things that they never used to charge them us for, such as if staff members are going to take us for appointments, like doctor's appointments or job center appointments, we will have to pay for the company car's petrol or for their bus fare.
Oh,
because the company's trying to save money.
Sorry to get like this, listeners, but I imagine this also has to do with like cuts in terms and funding as well to do with this accommodation. Yeah. But to put that responsibility on you, I'm sorry, that's obscene. Are you working currently?
I have a part-time job, yes.
That's part-time work. And yes. Especially I can imagine in some cases with appointments, you know, there's weeks where you maybe have one, or there's others where you have like two or three, and sometimes they're back to back, either across days or across the same day. And I imagine the cost in terms of travel, that can get very expensive very quickly.
But again, that should be on the company to deal with and yes. to get through funds and stuff, not on the clients. And one of the biggest issues that me and all the clients face is the lack of training given to staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know this because I used to work as a caregiver for the elderly. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing there. The only training we get is filling out online questionnaires, the rest of it coming from shadowing. And that definitely leads to a lot of staff, especially the younger ones, feeling indecisive when we have mental health crises or whatnot.
Luke, do you have anything you'd like to ask? Because I feel like this directly is in your department as far as what you work with.
I mean, do you feel like you're giving enough time to yourself in supported accommodation?
So in our flats, that's our own private space. It's our own flats. At the same time, and I've had to complain about this for the last 4 years, it hasn't happened so much recently, but it could happen any instant. Staff have been unlocking our front doors without even knocking. And that is outrageous. That's outrageously rude. Even though there are some residents with very high needs, that sometimes that might be necessary, even then, you can't do it unless you have a reason to do it. The door's locked. It's just they have keys.
Okay.
They can unlock it for any reason at all. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be they think that I'm sick and I can't stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Often when I've complained about that, they've defended themselves. For example, if in my previous 2-bed flats, before the other person moved in, people were having to do an inspection of the flat before the person moved in.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than giving me any heads up notice about that, the people who were going to do it just turned up on the morning without giving the accommodation any notice. And rather than the accommodation saying, no, you have to give us notice, do this next week, they just let them in and unlock my front door while I was still asleep.
That's really disorienting. I can only imagine that.
So I said they were doing inspections of the flat prior to the other person moving in. I didn't even know that was because someone else was moving in. And that person who moved in, they only told me he was moving in last minute, like 3 days beforehand. So we didn't have any chance to get to know each other and no chance to create any boundaries. And of course, that led to a lot of problems. But it was actually revealed later on after I asked the manager, so why my flat and not another 2-bed flat or another flat that was available? And they said because he already viewed the whole place and picked yours. And I didn't even know about that. So they were viewing my property behind my back. And that's not on.
Pardon me for this analogy, but it must in a way kind of feel like you're almost in a prison almost. Because if they're willing to do those sort of things underhandedly and just be like, okay, here you go, here's a new flatmate, then you must feel like you're on your toes a lot of the time.
One of the big problems that everyone in the world, except for the rich 1% face, is no control over their own house.
Mm-hmm.
The control that they do get is just given to them. And that's definitely the case living in supported accommodation. And it's even worse than with private renting because, I mean, we don't have a landlord. We just have the managers of the care workers, mm-hmm. but they have even more rights than landlords have. You know, they can unlock your front door anytime for any reason and other issues that I think I've already yes. mentioned.
Question. You don't have to say anything because I don't want you to get in trouble. Have you met these managers at all?
I meet them almost every day.
And if you come to them with, say, a complaint Or I imagine in shared accommodation, there's also, you probably have to deal with issues as far as belongings as well, like your own personal belongings that you bring with you and not just the stuff that's meant to be provided for you. Say if things go missing or...
Oh, yeah. So I already mentioned that because I moved into a new flat, they provided me some new things again, like microwave, toaster. There's certain things that are already built into the place, like fridges and freezers, ovens, dishwashers, washing machines. But anything that they provide, they have the right to just take them from you in an instant, even behind your back. And they did that once in the previous flat. They provided me with a wardrobe with a full-length mirror. And for some reason that they were struggling to justify, they just took it one day and replaced it with a wardrobe without a full-length mirror. We kept asking them why, and all they gave was excuses, you know, saying, who keeps a full-length mirror in the middle of their lounge? It's not yours. So just the simple fact that I didn't buy and pay for it means they can do what they want with it.
I've got issue with that as well, because I just feel like that line of reasoning just doesn't really cut it. It's just like, it's ours, so you've got it on loan, basically. That's what they're trying to say. If we want to take it back from you, we just can do that and you don't have any say or anything like that. Have you encountered, you know, have you heard similar stories outside of your own, be they online or maybe in certain groups you talk to about this? What do they say?
Honestly, I get so busy dealing with issues in my own place, I don't often have time to talk to other people outside. Mm-hmm. And that's really unfortunate. When I have spoken to other autistic people about it, I have heard from a few people who live in supported accommodation, although only a very few. Mm-hmm. Often the issue that they told me about is when residents who are obviously unwell, for example, make so much noise at night and they can't sleep, and it takes ages for the staff to deal with it. And that's the exact same problem that I've faced here myself.
Yeah.
So that's no surprise.
Yeah.
And there's also issues that other autistic people that I know who don't live in supported accommodation, they live in private renting or council flat, I can't remember exactly how it's paid for, but they see a support worker about twice a week or maybe three times a week or once a week. Yes. And they've encountered a few issues there, including loud noise at night. But that one's more of a communal issue rather than an issue specifically for supported accommodation.
Mm-hmm. You know, also I do have to ask as well, what's the general makeup of the shared accommodation that you stay in? Like, is it mostly men? Is it mostly women?
So I've answered that question to a lot of people. It's completely diverse. Although, having said that, in the two-bed flats, because it's a mix of two-bed flats, single flats, and studio flats,
mm-hmm.
you can only be placed with someone the same sex as you.
Okay.
So I can only be placed with a man, and it doesn't include couples. It's a complete diversity of people, complete gender diversity, complete age diversity. Okay. So there's people there who are 18. There's also people there who are retired,
right,
and have dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big diversity of needs. So there's me, who came out of a mental hospital when I was a teenager, but there's also people who came out of prison, people who've come out of rehab, people who have issues with alcohol and drugs. Mm-hmm. And it's a long list of individual needs, right, which on the one hand can be good because it preaches diversity. But on the other hand, it can be difficult to meet those individual needs of people efficiently when there are so many different people with different levels of needs.
Yes.
Living in the same place. Because you get people like me who only tend to need help when I'm talking on the phone or when I'm managing something that I haven't yet paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the time I'm okay. But you also get people who very rarely leave their house and need help all the time.
Yeah.
There are 45 residents in total and only about 6 members of staff on duty.
That is a very big problem, is the shortness of staff and also the high turnover of staff. What really strikes me when you say this is it's a diverse grouping. People have their own different life situations or what they're dealing with. But it's like they're all putting you into one grab bag And they don't seem to really know how to totally prioritize that. And the fact that it's only six people definitely doesn't help matters. Luke, I imagine you must have something to say, because I know you deal with advocacy work.
My question is about advocacy, actually. Some of the residents, you know, who live near you might not be able to speak up for themselves. Do they get access to advocacy support, or either, you know, formally through, you know, a charity that provides independent advocacy, or family members?
That 100% depends on the client. And I don't want to speak for other people because I don't want to breach confidentiality. But me personally, I get support, from family. But also I see a therapist once a week, and the NHS is there whenever I need them. Yes, another thing I wanted to mention is the way staff are treated by management at the accommodation is appalling. Even though that's about them and not really about me, it definitely affects the clients.
Of course it does. Of course it does.
I already mentioned one thing under training, but a lot of members of staff have actually quit. They either quit or they continue in misery, as especially the young female staff quit. Often when they've dealt with, say, sexual harassment from clients that staff haven't fully protected them from as much as they could have. And of course, staff do not get any control over their hours. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was a zero-hour contract. They're low-waged, so they make less than £11 an hour. They work usually from like 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. at least. And these are all problems that can definitely be addressed if they're members of their trade union. They can definitely address it there. And that's what the union's for.
That is what they're for. It goes to show, because this is a concern I have with people who work in those fields. In some ways, it's like with staff who work in these particular sort of fields. Sometimes the kind of treatment that they get from, say, managers, or in the case of a company that you're dealing with, is quite alarming, because it's as if they don't factor in that they're dealing with people, some of them in more sensitive conditions than others. And yeah, as you said, these hours are long, these hours are grueling, and they're very underpaid. Whether they quit or they try to stick in there because they want to help, I say power to them. But it's just, it's horrible, because those are always the people who are like the first, next to people like yourself, they're always the first ones who get hit by these sort of situations. And they get hit very, very hard.
Yeah. They're always bossed around, not only by their manager, but also by colleagues as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Joe, you know, you touched on, you know, the high staff turnover. Have you noticed any sort of impact it's had on some of your neighbours?
Well, it's basically the same impact that it has on me, because when there's not enough staff and a lot of residents, if residents have problems like they got an injury or something, they would have to call like an ambulance to help them instead of themselves. Not just because they're not always trained to help, but also because they're just like so short-staffed. I mentioned the point earlier about the accommodation charging residents for the staff's bus fare when they take us to appointments. The reason they choose the bus rather than walk is because they're so short-staffed, they got to be at the accommodation on time.
Wow.
They can't spend all day walking up the hill.
That's not right, that. Do you have any aspirations to eventually live like independently, either in private rented accommodation or as a homeowner?
If I was to live anywhere next, I would still see a support worker every week, because I don't think I'd be fully ready for it. But the main thing that's keeping me where I am now is the economics. The simple fact that where I live is rent-free while I work part-time. And living rent-free and travel-free, because I've got a Freedom Pass in London, is a big deal. One of the things I do need help with is managing my own money. I spent a long time unemployed once, and that even gave me a food bank voucher more than once, which you can easily get if you live in supported accommodation. Like, I'm literally living in this supported accommodation indefinitely now. I don't see myself moving to fully independent housing anytime soon. But that's all right, you know, because I do need the support at the moment. And even when I don't need support, I'm still independent. There was another thing that I forgot to mention on the list of things to complain about. Now, this thing itself isn't so much a bad thing, but I feel like it's like by the accommodation, and that's when me and other clients have visitors over, they have to sign in, and not only sign in, but they need their ID and proof of address. I think the ID and proof of address is not only unnecessary, I think it's taking it too far. Because even though there are plenty of residents who have been known to bring people who are banned from site in for dangerous behaviour, I don't think the way to stop that is to make people sign in with their IDs and proof of address. Particularly as I don't honestly want the support staff to know exactly who I bring in all the time.
I mean, are they asking for consent?
I know that in like old people's homes, you've got to sign in and stuff. But even then, you just got to write your name and signature and time. But again, that's different because that's for the most needy people. But some people, but not everyone in my accommodation is that needy. It is a rule that you can sometimes easily bypass, like just have someone over when staff aren't looking.
So if you ever speak to someone who's, you know, thinking of moving into supported accommodation, what advice would you give them?
Well, I would first have to know the company and whether it's profit or not for profit, because that would make a big difference. I would advise them that it's a care facility, but it's not a hospital. You have all the rights that you can possibly have as a human being in there. It's not like hospitals where you're searched on the way in and where you can only do certain things and you have to be checked, you know, to see if you're safe and all that. It's not like that. The way I described supported accommodation, like I described it earlier, is it's your own home. There's just people there to support you whenever you need them 24/7. That's what I tell somebody if they were going to move into supported accommodation, is just to remember it's a care facility. They'll be there whenever you need them. But it's not supposed to be like a hospital setting. There have been staff who've abused that position of power and have been really authoritarian to residents, but we still have the right to complain about that.
In what ways have they been authoritarian?
If I recall correctly, there was one member of staff, don't know what happened to her in the end, when she was working there. If we were breaking any rules, because they do have rules in there that they think they can just dump on us. If we break them, she'd say, you're on warnings and don't be disobedient, which not only was shocking, but it was also really just nasty. And when I say breaking rules, because even now they always talk about the rules and always tell us it as if it's, you know, school. By that point, that included dogs not being allowed to visit us. Now, that was a rule that didn't last long because I just had my own dog come visit me as much as I wanted and there was nothing they could do about it. But that is an example of management dumping new rules on residents without talking to them first, without giving any reasons behind it, and giving staff permission to just blackmail us into following them and intimidate us. So that's what I mean by authoritarian behaviour from staff.
Definitely Braverman-esque.
Do you have anything else you'd like to ask, Luke?
I suppose, you know, is there anything else about your experience that you'd like to share, Joe?
And also, is there any advice you would like to pass on as well, or just stuff you would like to say to those in shared accommodation or considering it?
If you mean like advice on how to complain about things that you don't agree with, then what I would say is, I mean, that's a question that even I'm struggling to answer myself because I'm always searching for answers. Like all companies, they have complaints procedures when they're the ones doing the problems. Why would you complain to them? But even though they're privatized, they have contracts with the local authorities. So like how I've written to my counsellor, they can do that, write to your counsellor, or arrange to meet your counsellor for a coffee and talk about it. For people working in supported accommodation, first thing I'd say is join your union. because that's the number one place to discuss workplace issues, whether it's about you or your clients or both. And for people living in there, talk to other people living there, whether you get along with them or not. If you feel safe enough talking to them, of course, get together and discuss what it is you can do to meet your demands. So, for example, one issue that I've faced in the long time of living in where I live is we don't have Wi-Fi. Like even when we've bought our own broadbands, they don't connect because there's not enough wires built in. And that's because the company will just won't spend the money on it. And every time we've made that point, they've always said, oh, yeah, we'll deal with it. We'll deal with it. And they haven't. Or when they said they will, they said it will take more than a year, which is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And specifically what to do about that, which I've tried doing, although struggled to do since not many residents are on board, is to make a petition and get as much signatures as possible and discuss what to say to management when complaining about it. That's the together we have power strategy.
You know, you need decent broadband, you know, do a lot of things, you know, apply for jobs, connect them for wider world, get information about any services.
You don't need to explain it. That's just the accommodation, you know, finding excuses to put money first. There's a lot of things to complain about in my place, which really sucks, given that it should be a place that I, as a vulnerable person, should just want to settle in. We have, every 2 months or however frequent, I don't really go to them anymore, tenancy meetings organized by management for the residents. No one turns up to them. I certainly don't. Because when we have, they've chaired it undemocratically and not let us finish sentences when we've had so much to complain about. Or when we have had so much to complain about and they've let us say it, they were just like, right, can you please name 3 things you like about this place? Which is patronizing. And at the end, just say how upset they are that we're unhappy with them, which is unprofessional. Because that's just like a doctor feeling upset that you have cancer and not wanting to help you. Residents do not have the motivation or the say required to want to go to tenancy meetings and speak their case. And we've mentioned that to management and they say that's a different discussion, which doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of very interesting things.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I'd agree as well. But I think on this note, Joe, thank you for coming on. It's been very, very interesting to hear about your situation as far as shared accommodation. And I sincerely hope that it improves. If trade unions don't help, then you're just going to have to do like other people have been doing for the last how many years, and you just got to take it to the streets and get socially active, you know?
But what I would say is there is no if trade unions don't work. They do work. And
okay.
But if your union or your union branch doesn't work,
yeah,
because I do admit there are those that are too bureaucratic and too eager to negotiate, even the most militant ones, I would say just find somebody in that union, preferably a rep, who is willing to help and is willing to admit when they can do better. I think personally, with care workers, that should be easy. Because Unison, which is the public sector, they represent mm-hmm. care workers included. And there are plenty of people in Unison who, despite being bureaucrats, will help you out in protesting against any bad workplace conditions.
I would agree.
They can definitely help out even if you've already quit the job. Because mm-hmm. having already quit the job because you can't afford being on a 0-hour contract or your mental health can't take all that pressure, that is a workplace issue in itself.
Yes, it is. I have to unfortunately end this here, but thank you for coming on once again. And if anybody else would like to come on and discuss other issues like this or just have a general sort of one-to-one interview, see the links provided on the website and check all your usual streaming places for if you'd like to catch up, check the next episodes of the podcast. So that's me and Luke and Joe, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Solidarity.
Indeed.